Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, August 5th, 2021. How school districts are preparing for first day of class as COVID makes comeback. By Sachi McClendon, SACHI at BigBendSentinel.com. Presidio County. As the highly contagious Delta variant of the coronavirus sweeps across the state, school districts in the county are gearing up to hold the first in-person classes of the school year. Despite the increase in hospitalizations and infection rates throughout Texas from the new variant, Governor Greg Abbott has prohibited school districts from implementing a mask mandate on campus for both students and staff. Texans, not government, should decide their best health practices, which is why masks will not be mandated by public school districts or government entities. We can continue to mitigate COVID-19 while defending Texans' liberty to choose whether or not they mask up, the governor said in regards to his executive order back in May. As it stands, there will be no virtual class offerings at Marfa Independent School District, where school is set to begin on August 16th. In theory, the district could switch over to virtual classes, but Superintendent Oscar Aguero says it's too expensive to make the switch. As of right now, the state will not fund virtual classes, he said. We won't have the ability to have teachers designated just for virtual, and it's too hard to do both. It would be almost impossible for us funding-wise and to allow our teachers to do the job they need to be doing. Since vaccines are not being offered to people under the age of 12, Aguero is recommending all students ineligible for vaccination, as well as those who haven't received the vaccine, wear a mask while at school. Aguero estimated there are between 125 to 140 kids below the age of 12 at the school district. To my staff, I'm recommending that they all wear masks, but again, they have that choice, Aguero said. And then to all kids, especially 11 and under, to wear masks. If a student refuses to wear a mask in class, Aguero said that the district cannot reprimand them in any way. We can recommend that they wear it, but we can't force them to wear it, he said. Yet, Aguero is hopeful that students will comply with his mask recommendations. He said, "Our community has been really good about it. Last year, the kids totally understood it." Despite not being able to enforce a mask mandate, the district will be practicing as much social distancing as possible. "Traditionally, we do breakfast in the cafeteria," Aguero said, "but elementary breakfast will be in the classrooms again this year. That way we don't have 100 kids in the cafeteria." In classrooms, teachers will orient the desks to all be facing the same way, and dividers will be installed as well to prevent the spread of the disease, Aguero said. The district will also disinfect the building daily. At the beginning of summer, the Marfa ISD School Board voted to only offer face-to-face instruction for the upcoming year. At the time, vaccines were becoming more readily available and infection rates were dropping significantly within the county. The school board was further spurred to sanction in-person classes after Aguero announced that 5 teachers would part ways with the district if they would have to provide a mixture of online and face-to-face instruction. Overall, Aguero feels like his hands are somewhat tied thanks to Abbott's executive order. I'm a big believer in the mask, so if we could mandate it, we would. I'm not going to hesitate on that at all, he said. We're not out of danger. We're not out of the situation. And the only way we are going to eliminate this is to be vaccinated and wear masks. Many of the same measures are being put in place over at Presidio Independent School District, where the first day of school kicks off on August 11th. Superintendent Ray Vasquez said that he encourages all staff and students to wear their masks, as the district will only provide in-person learning for the upcoming school year. Presidio ISD facilities will undergo a heightened disinfection protocol that includes the use of an electrostatic machine, daily frequent cleaning, especially high-touch surfaces. Hand sanitizer will be available at all PISD facilities, Vasquez said in an email. Vasquez added that around 90% of district employees are fully vaccinated and that there are currently no positive COVID cases in the district. He said, on Monday evening, August 2nd, 2021, we had a back-to-school meeting with all Presidio ISD parents. We want to reassure our parents that we are doing everything possible to keep our students and staff safe while providing students with a high quality of education. Portillo given 3 years probation, $5,000 fine, and phone spoofing scandal. By Sachi McClendon, SACHI at BigBenSentinel.com. Brewster County. Devin Portillo, a former sheriff candidate for Brewster County, has been sentenced to 3 years of probation and a $5,000 fine after pleading guilty to making a false statement to agents with the Federal Bureau of Investigation in the phone spoofing scandal that shook up the 2020 Brewster County Sheriff's Office election race. During the run-up to the election, Portillo sent out a racist message using technology known as spoofing that made it appear as if Brewster County Sheriff Ronnie Dodson, who was running for re-election at the time, had authored the text. When questioned by the FBI soon after, Portillo denied having spoofed Dodson's phone, saying that another person was responsible for the fake message. Yet, in subsequent interviews with the agency, Portillo admitted that he was, in fact, to blame for the racist text. When it first happened, we immediately knew it was some kind of ploy. That's why I took the initiative to call the FBI to get them to come right away to clear my phone, Dodson said in an interview. And they did show that I didn't send any kind of messages or anything like that. While spoofing alone can be considered a crime, Portillo was ultimately only charged with making a false statement to authorities, which can carry a sentence of up to 5 years in federal prison. Nonetheless, Portillo waived his right to a trial, resulting in a probated sentence that was handed down last month in July. I got to respect the judge's decision. The only thing I can say is he did a lot of damage to my family and my reputation there for a little bit. But I'm real lucky that the people of the county and the people who know me know I'm not that way, Dodson said. One special condition of Portillo's bond is that he is not to have contact with Dodson or any member of his family. Portillo no longer resides in Brewster County, however, significantly reducing the chances of Portillo interacting with the chief law enforcement officer in the county. Portillo's lawyer, Stephen Spurgeon, declined to comment on the probated sentence. Beyond the official sentencing, Portillo, who was employed at the sheriff's office for less than a year up until August 2019, will be facing the possibility of having his peace officer's license stripped. In the state of Texas, an officer's license is to be revoked if they are convicted of a felony. According to the Texas Commission of Law Enforcement, Portillo still has his license. Yet now that he's been sentenced, the agency will consider revoking it, preventing him from working as a law enforcement officer in the state. Before the spoofing incident, Portillo's campaign for sheriff was already mired in controversy. As the Big Bend Sentinel previously reported, an online petition demanding Portillo withdraw from the race popped up in June of last year after racist tweets that used the N-word alongside derogatory stereotypes from 2013 were found on Portillo's Twitter account. At the time, Portillo had denied that he had authored those tweets, calling the controversy a matter of political sabotage. Portillo declined to comment further after the Big Bend Sentinel found evidence that cast doubt on his assertions. In August of last year, Portillo dropped out of the race, leading to a landslide victory for Dodson. The federal prosecutor's office for the Western District of Texas declined to comment on the matter. With COVID-19 cases on the rise, Tri-County residents seek information on testing and vaccines. By Ursula Munoz Schaefer. URSULA at BigBendSentinel.com. Tri-County. On Monday, July 26th, Alpine resident Megan Sides found out her 64-year-old mother was COVID positive. She had been hospitalized a few days prior after spending several weeks with what the family thought was a bad cold, which turned into a fever. On Friday, they were told she had a viral infection and was being sent home. 3 days later, they learned that she'd caught the highly contagious virus, now responsible for 613,000 deaths in the United States and 52,000 in Texas alone. Although her mother lives in Fort Davis, she visits Alpine regularly to help take care of Megan's grandmother. Following the news, Megan made 15 calls to different clinics and pharmacies, looking for a way for herself, her grandmother, and their part-time caretaker to get tested. She couldn't find anyone who was doing non-referral testing, but she couldn't get a referral without first getting an appointment, and she couldn't get an appointment right away. Each clinic she called referred her somewhere else, she said, and no one seemed to have any answers. It was just very frustrating. There seemed to be a lack of information and no easy way to find it, Megan wrote to the Big Bend Sentinel. There has to be an easier way. Finally, she got an appointment with her general practitioner 4 days after initially calling to get tested. Unfortunately, her grandmother's doctor wasn't available until the second week of August, but they happened to have a friend who was visiting El Paso and able to return with home tests for them from a Walgreens there. All three of them all tested negative, and her mother's symptoms don't seem much worse than those of a cold at the moment. Still, she said, it's scary to think about how much worse it could have been. Megan's mother is a breakthrough case. That means she tested positive for COVID despite receiving a vaccine. With cases on the rise, due in part to the novel Delta variant and a well-documented lack of medical resources in the region, Megan is just one of many residents of the Tri-County area who has voiced frustration about her lack of options. But unfortunately, many of these factors are also out of practitioners' control. COVID-19 tests. Dr. Christy Alexander of the Marfa Clinic told the Big Bend Sentinel that although her clinic is testing regularly, testing kits don't always arrive in a timely fashion, which in turn means that they run out of test materials. Well, this hasn't occurred too often. She said she foresees it happening more frequently now that testing has picked up again in the wake of the Delta variant. Sometimes you only get them in packs of four, or you request them from the lab and they're happy to send them to you, but it's like, how many can they give you at a time? She explained. Call the office, see if we have the test available, and then absolutely come get tested. Another factor to consider is that getting tested the very day one gets exposed may not provide an accurate result, she said. This is why doctors will usually recommend a 3 to 5 day window for patients to self-isolate before getting tested. If you're going to come in contact with the virus, it takes a couple of days for that viral load to occur to determine if the case is truly positive, said Dr. Alexander. If you think you have been exposed to someone today but you don't have any symptoms, it's better to quarantine in your home and then come in and get tested on day 4 or 5 or when you develop symptoms. Ruth Huck, a spokesperson for Big Bend Regional Medical Center, told the Big Bend Sentinel that the hospital has seen a significant increase in individuals seeking COVID-19 tests, as well as an increase in individuals testing positive. Currently, Huck said, BBRMC has 3 patients hospitalized with COVID. Both she and Dr. Alexander recommend self-isolation pending test results. The increased demand for COVID tests seems to be a pattern across the region. Preventative Care Health Services CEO Linda Molinar said that her organization has seen an increase in testing this past month, although she was not able to confirm how many of these people have tested positive. Molinar also said that PCHS, which houses Family Health Services of Alpine, Marfa Community Health Clinic, and the Presidio County Medical Clinic, offers COVID testing, but that individuals have to be symptomatic in order to get tested. Prices range depending on the type of test, which the patient's doctor must determine. The Big Bend Regional Medical Center also offers testing with a provider's orders. This includes rapid in-office testing for those with symptoms. Testing is free, but the cost of the office visit may vary. BBRMC also offers an uninsured self-pay discount. Testing at the Marfa Clinic is generally free. Fees are waived if insurance passes them on to the patient or if they are self-pay. Christina Wright, a nurse at the Texas Department of State Health Services in Presidio County, told the Big Bend Sentinel that although there is a nationwide initiative to ramp up COVID-19 tests, her entity is not yet testing because they are waiting for supplies and don't know when they will arrive. The National Guard had previously been testing people in the region, but this hasn't been available for some time now. COVID-19 vaccinations. Professionals are also recommending getting vaccinated and going back to wearing masks in order to minimize the risk of contagion. According to Wright, Presidio County continues to have the highest vaccination rate in the state of Texas, which is a good thing. When we look at states with the lowest vaccination rates, we see the highest rates of COVID infection, she said. This is proof COVID vaccines work. Nothing could be more important for yourself, your family, and your community than to get vaccinated. DSHS is currently offering Pfizer and Moderna vaccines in Alpine on Mondays from 10 a.m. to noon and 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. Presidio on Tuesdays from 9:30 a.m. to noon and 1 p.m. to 3:30 p.m. Van Horn on Wednesdays from 10 a.m. to noon and 1 p.m. to 3 p.m., and Marfa on Thursdays from 9:30 a.m. to noon and 1 p.m. to 4:30 p.m. The Pfizer vaccine is only eligible for those aged 12 and up, and Moderna is available for ages 18 and up. Children aged 12 to 17 need parental consent and someone who is at least 18 years old to accompany them. BBRMC is no longer offering vaccines, but the Highland Drug and Prescription Shop pharmacies in Alpine are both offering the Moderna vaccine by appointment. Family Health Services of Alpine is also offering Moderna shots on Tuesdays from 10 a.m. to noon. In Presidio, the Presidio County Medical Clinic is offering Moderna shots on Mondays starting at 10:30 a.m. The Marfa Community Health Clinic offers shots as well, but hours may vary. This is the time that we need to go back to what we were doing in the early days of COVID to keep everybody safe and to keep our hospital admissions down so that our hospitals don't get overrun, said Dr. Alexander. We need to stop giving this virus bodies to mutate in, and that's the bottom line. County to propose tax increase, balanced budget. By Abby Perot, ABBIE at BigBenSentinel.com. Presidio County. Three county budget workshops last month have given shape to the 2022 fiscal year budget for Presidio County. Revenues are expected to grow this coming year, making room for commissioners to debate the allocations of county revenue toward various departments and bigger capital outlay costs. Each year, as property valuations grow or shrink, new tax rates are calculated to find what tax rate would bring in exactly the same amount of revenue as the previous fiscal year. From there, taxing entities like the county are allowed to increase taxes by 3.5% to the voter approval rate. While they can set the rate even higher, voters would then be able to petition for a rollback election that could knock tax rates back down. Commissioners this year are considering setting the 2022 tax rate at the voter approval rate, a 3.5% increase above the no new revenue rate. They won't vote, hold a hearing, or approve that rate until after the proposed budget is filed on August 15th. But if it passes, it will help generate the estimated $5,089,000 maintenance and operations budget that the county has to work with for the 2022 budget. Revenues in 2021 were around $4,993,000, and the $96,000 increase for the new fiscal year is mostly due to a slight tax increase, along with the addition of new properties to the rolls, according to County Auditor Patty Roach. The auditor hopes the county's general fund balance will also grow a bit in the last 2 months of the 2021 fiscal year. Some of our revenues have not come in to the extent we would like them to, but I am hopeful that the next 2 months will change that. Our tax collection is a little bit lower than what I would expect it to be at this time of year, and we're still seeing the effects of COVID, she said. That includes the slowed down pace of courts, which normally are able to bring in more revenue than they have. Before the pandemic started, we had collected most of our anticipated property tax in 2020, so we didn't see the impact we could have seen. But that may be why collections are down this year. People may be feeling the pinch, and it could be something they're deferring to pay off, Roach said. Most county department budgets remained steady this year, with minor variations. Costs for office expenses can be predictable, but travel budgets have changed since the future of in-person training for county employees remains unpredictable due to the recent decline and then slight rise in COVID nationwide. It's usually capital outlay where someone says, I need this thing, and it's a big thing, Roach explained. After a series of emergencies in the past fiscal year, the Department of Emergency Management has been budgeted for a series of capital outlays, large one-time costs to purchase equipment or construction. Included in their list are defibrillators, a generator switch and installation, portable generators, and the Marfa Airport Emergency Operations Area and its accompanying utilities. The latter has been in the budget for several years, rolling over from previous years since the project has not gotten underway. Judge Cinderella Guevara said that during the Texas winter storm, she found out someone had been looking for an emergency generator to keep their father's medical equipment running. The addition of portable generators to the county's arsenal will allow them to deliver the equipment during power outages to those who need electricity to survive. The Road and Bridge Department is budgeted for a $28,000 used dump truck. The tax office is holding onto $1,500 in contingency funds to replace aging computers, and the sheriff's office requested $8,000 for contingencies. This year, they have funded repairs in dispatch and have identified issues with the radio repeater at Chinati Peak. The airport and the jail both have separate budgets from the main county one, since they both rely on their own revenues rather than tax revenues being attached to them. At the jail, nearly $70,000 was budgeted for radios, body cameras, filing cabinets, desks, and other unspecified set-asides that could be used if washers, dryers, or the walk-in freezer go out. While Commissioner Buddy Knight questioned the need, Jail Administrator Gracie Parras reassured him that the items in question were necessary to buy in the coming fiscal year. We need to look at the toys list and say, is this the year we buy the constable a truck? Is this the year we buy a 40K lawnmower? Auditor Roach asked. Commissioners trimmed down the budget by cutting out capital outlay requests from certain departments, removing from the budget a mower for the golf course fairway, a new constable patrol vehicle, a new emergency management vehicle, a road sweeper, and $2,000 in unspecified funds for elections. County Clerk Florcita Zubia and Tax Assessor Collector Natalia Williams put in a request for a full-time position to oversee elections, manage the new redistricting that will happen this year, and clean up the voter rolls. A primary potential runoff and general election will take place in the coming fiscal year, and the two officials asked commissioners to consider a full-time worker. Previously, Zubia had overseen elections, but in her new capacity as county/district clerk, she and Williams said it was too much to take on. I had all my time to dedicate to that, but now I don't, Zubia said. This year, Natalia and I are going to elections school, but in the future, the new elections employee, will be focusing on elections and going to school to learn about the new laws. Commissioners rebuffed the request, though, instead adding more money to the budget for a seasonal worker to come in during election times. Zubia did, however, successfully petition to raise the pay for election judges and clerks, citing that the county was not competitive with the city in its pay to election workers and that some workers actually walked out during elections because of the pay disparity between city and county election work. Commissioner Brenda Bentley also persuaded the court to move the courthouse custodian to full-time employee after they all agreed the quality of work and improvements to the facility thus far were well worth the investment. The county moved $100,000 to partially fund an ambulance for Presidio EMS, which services residents in the unincorporated parts of South County. Commissioner Eloy Aranda said, "We should focus on the medical part of emergency services. We're talking about human lives here," imploring the county to focus on the basic health and safety needs of the people in Presidio. After a proposal from County Attorney Rod Ponton, another $75,000 of surplus funds was put into a contingency fund. That may go toward helping with the development of an express clinic in Presidio, but commissioners wanted to see more detailed plans before firmly committing county money to the project. In a plea to commissioners, District Attorney Ori White successfully saw the addition of $14,000 to his budget this year, growing to $50,000 after telling commissioners about the various services he's providing to the county. White said the funds would go toward his plan to hire an additional attorney at the DA's office. Speaking to commissioners, White mentioned pending child sexual assault cases, drug charges, cases involving human smuggling of undocumented immigrants at the border, and the retrying of a case for the brutal murder of a Marfa teacher. "Y'all have to decide what level of felony prosecution y'all want. I think I can do a robust job for y'all if you give me $50,000, and it's my job to assess what resources I need." With funds to spare after hearing proposals from all departments, commissioners went forward with a 3% raise for all employees, which will amount to around 45 cents per hour for hourly workers and an annual $909 increase for salaried employees, totaling an estimated $90,000. The proposed budget is set to be filed August 15th, with commissioners then working on the tax rate and the final passage of a budget before the September 30th deadline.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Tuesday, August 3rd, 2021, Education section. First Gen American Honored for Essay by Rebecca Bell. "I always felt that English was my worst subject in high school," Eileen Munoz said. Little did she know that just a year after graduating from high school, she would win second place in the Midland College Nonfiction Writing Contest for an essay she first wrote in a developmental college English class. The essay also led to her giving a presentation at the Midland College Diversity Conference this past February. The essay entitled "How My Mom Brought Me Closer to My Culture Through Folklorico" is a description of how, as a child growing up in El Paso, Munoz learned about Mexican folklorico dances and costumes from her Mexican immigrant mother. "I remember that I was always interested in learning about how each region in Mexico had a different dress style in ballet folklorico. My mom and I would spend hours talking about the various regions and how each had unique customs. The dances that I learned were a wonderful way to celebrate our heritage. When we were given an assignment to write an essay in my first college English class, I wrote about my experiences learning ballet folklorico and the culture that accompanied the dances." During her second English course, this time college-level English, Munoz continued to develop the essay. Her English professor, William Christopher Brown, was so impressed with her writing style and the sincerity of her words that he encouraged her to give a presentation about the subject at the diversity conference. "I was nervous at first, but Dr. Brown was very patient with me," she said. "He spent time after class helping me perfect my presentation, and I even created PowerPoint slides to enhance my presentation. It was a great experience, and I'm grateful to Dr. Brown for recommending me to present at the conference. I can honestly say that being able to write about something that had meaning to me really helped me improve my writing abilities. Eileen did a phenomenal job at the conference, Brown said. The fact that, as a first-year college student, Eileen presented a paper during an international conference that she began in a developmental English class at the age of 18 is highly significant. This is exactly what professionals with graduate-level degrees do. My first conference presentation occurred when I was 29 and at the end of obtaining my master's degree. I was just dazzled by her presentation. Munoz wants to be a nurse. She will spend one more year finishing her nursing prerequisite courses and then plans to enroll in Midland College's associate degree nursing program to prepare to become a registered nurse. She's the first in her family to attend college, but said that she will not be the last. She's paving the way for her three younger sisters to go to college. Rebecca Bell is Executive Director of Institutional Advancement at Midland College. Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, August 5th, 2021. Renovations and Repairs Underway by Megan Waring. Following the city of Fort Stockton's $1.2 million purchase of Stockton's Entertainment last year, the event center is still undergoing renovations. The former entertainment complex housed a movie theater, bowling alley, and an outdoor mini-golf course. But unsuccessful ownerships and minimal revenue led the business to permanently close in 2018. While there are several projects and visions floating around, Fort Stockton City Manager Frank Rodriguez said the city is primarily focused on turning the bowling alley into a convention hall for the Big Bend Open Road Race Banquet in October. "You bring people from all over for this race," Rodriguez said. "They stay here for a week. They're eating at the restaurants, putting in gas, and staying in hotels. That just helps the city's sale tax. It is a good all-around event for the city." The goal for the convention hall is to have the capability to host various events at the same time, including car shows, hunting expos, sports clinics, and department trainings. Rodriguez hopes to see frequent events attract more visitors to Fort Stockton. The city is working to transform the mini golf course into an outdoor concert venue, along with a possible drive-in movie theater. He added that some projects are not yet set in stone, as it will be up to the Fort Stockton Convention and Visitors Bureau's discretion on what will move forward. Rodriguez credits the city employees for their hard work and dedication in keeping up the construction timeline. "Our people have done a lot," he said. "I'm just so proud of them because they come in and they don't complain. They have this skill set and they just do it. They really do a remarkable job helping us with the construction. There is no completion date for the entire space as the city has to phase everything out," said Cindy Melendez of the CVB. Input sought from business owners by Jeremy Gonzalez. City Manager Frank Rodriguez issued a survey to downtown business owners on August 3rd in efforts to discuss possible revitalization projects. The survey requested input on ideas such as Main Street being a one-way, removal of trees and planters, making the downtown area a walking district with no vehicle traffic, and consideration of slanting the parking lanes substantially. Rodriguez says there are no plans set for any of the listed ideas and only issued the survey to hear the opinions of the downtown business owners. "City Council tasked me to speak with downtown business owners, so I created a survey that would spark conversation on what they would like to see. This was strictly to start up a dialogue with the downtown community members. There's no plans set in motion. A lot of times when a city revitalizes their downtown area, they will widen a street, make it a one-way, or make it a walking district. I wanted to get the downtown business owners' input on these ideas before we start having meetings and making plans. Their feedback is vital as we focus on promoting and revitalizing the downtown area." FSISD gives over 150 vaccines by Nathan Heuer. The Fort Stockton Independent School District held their first ever vaccine clinic on Tuesday in partnership with the National Guard. A total of 174 students, parents, and community members received a combination of Pfizer and Johnson & Johnson shots. Fort Stockton ISD Assistant Superintendent Gilray Madrid reported that between 5 and 10 Johnson & Johnson doses were given out, and the rest were Pfizer's. A majority of the shots were first time, and a handful of doses were second shots. The school was allowed 350 shots for the clinic. Individuals who received their first shot at the clinic held at the high school's special event center are scheduled to receive their second dose on Tuesday, August 24th, according to Madrid. Fort Stockton ISD requires face-to-face instruction. The Fort Stockton Independent School District will be returning to 100% face-to-face instruction for the 21-22 school year. Remote online instruction has been discontinued for the upcoming school year in accordance with state lawmakers' decisions. Classes begin at 8 a.m. on Monday, August 16th. The decision was discussed at the FISD board meeting on July 26 and is effective immediately. Two meetings were held the previous week to get the input of teachers, administrators, and school personnel. Nearly 90% of the school personnel that gave input were in favor of discontinuing remote instruction and moving entirely to face-to-face instruction, according to a report given by Ron Klein, assistant superintendent. School personnel feel strongly that this decision will be the best plan that needed to be taken at the start of the school year to both protect our students and faculty and staff, while also providing that all our students receive best and most effective education. Both statewide and local testing data shows that, on average, the students that receive in-person instruction perform significantly better in all tested subjects than their counterparts that remained on remote instruction. In general, the longer the student was doing remote, the lower their test scores. This data and conclusions were released earlier this month by Mike Morath. The decision also was predicated by actions taken, or rather not taken, by the Texas legislature in the spring of 2021. The Texas legislature failed to address the issue of continuing to fund remote instruction statewide. The legislation to fund remote instruction had not been passed prior to the Democratic members of the legislature ending the session by walking out over objections to more controversial legislation. The matter was not brought up in the special session that occurred this summer. There are no state funds allocated to fund remote instruction currently at school districts in Texas. As a result, Texas school districts are discontinuing remote instruction. FSISD will maintain the ability to return to remote instruction if it is deemed necessary in the event of an emergency executive order by the governor, commissioner of education, Texas state health officials, or actions by the school board or superintendent. As a result, the FISD will be returning to face-to-face in-person instruction beginning the first day of instruction this coming 21-22 school year. Masks are encouraged, but neither students nor adults will be required to wear them on campus or on school transportation. Any student or adult on campus that chooses to do so will be allowed and encouraged to do so. Principals and teachers are to ensure that no mask bullying, shaming takes place between students or adults, either for wearing masks or against it. COVID vaccine shots are encouraged but not required for those that qualify. FISD will not restrict access to COVID vaccinated or unvaccinated individuals. This is in compliance with Texas state law and the Governor Abbott's executive order on the subject. Athletics. For all FISD students returning to face-to-face instruction, FISD will no longer be allowing remote-only students to participate in UIL activities. There will be no more remote-only students, and thus there is no need to continue this policy. If individual students do happen to acquire COVID-19, then they will need to be quarantined for 10 days as ordered by a doctor. These students will not attend remotely. Their work will be sent home for them to complete the same as in any other absence. If a significant number of school personnel or students are quarantined, then the student, commissioner of education, or governor may reengage the distance learning program as needed in their professional judgment.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahans News for Thursday, July 29th. WMH managers vote to fire Dr. Ng. The story was written by Paul Cyphers. Meeting in a special session on July 15th, the Ward Memorial Board of Managers approved a vote of confidence for action taken by CEO Leticia Rodriguez to terminate the contract of Dr. Federico Ng. The managers met in closed executive session to discuss the matter and then ratified the decision of the CEO when returning to public session. The details of the termination were not disclosed as the discussions in executive session dealing with personnel matters beyond the sustaining vote are not required to be revealed in open session, according to Texas open meeting statutes. There were no other items on the agenda for that meeting. Dr. Ng had just recently joined the Sandhills Family Clinic staff in May. Managers present for the brief meeting were Dr. John Fawcett, Gerald Carlson, Frank Heslin, Lisa Stewart, Larry Hunt, Tommy Escamilla, Angel Fuentes, and Jeff Birdie. Normally, the Monahans News receives meeting notices from the hospital, which includes the agenda with details on all agenda items. In this meeting, that did not happen. The agenda notice was, however, posted 72 hours ahead of the meeting with the county clerk as required by law. After last Thursday's, July 22nd meeting, Rodriguez and Chairman John Fawcett were asked why the news was not notified of the meeting. Both were seemingly surprised, and Fawcett said, quote, "We were surprised you weren't here, as this was certainly newsworthy," end quote. Rodriguez said, quote, "I had asked Vanessa Alanis to send notice to the board members. I didn't think about including the news. So it was my fault, and I do apologize," end quote. Alanis is the HR director for the hospital and the individual that normally sends the information. Gambling room raid nets three arrests. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Ward County Sheriff's Office, WCSO, along with the Monahans Police Department and Texas Department of Public Safety, recently raided two gambling rooms and arrested three men. According to a press release from the Ward County Sheriff's Office, investigators executed two search warrants at 2411 South Stockton and 2100 West Seeley, formerly known as the Blue Room. Quote, "During the course of the investigation of the game rooms, it was discovered cash was being paid to patrons, which is a violation of law," Faye said. The raid yielded three arrests: Toan Nguyen, age 64, of Arlington, Chao Van Phan, age 36, of Kermit, and Vong Tan Nguyen, age 51, of Garland. All three were charged with keeping a gambling place, a Class A misdemeanor, and were taken to the Ward County Jail. These two game rooms and several others in the county have been raided and shut down by the Ward County Sheriff's Office numerous times, but this is the first time arrests have been made on owners. Quote, "In order to deter anyone from opening another game room, we will be filing charges against anyone running them," Faye added. Bond was set at $1,000 each, and all three posted the bond and were released. The offense carries a penalty of up to a year in the Texas Department of Criminal Justice and or a fine up to $4,000. Council to raise utility rates first time since 2018. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. The city of Monahans is proposing about a 5% increase in utility rates based on actions taken during Tuesday's meeting of the City Council. The first readings of ordinances to increase sanitation, solid waste, and water and sewer rates were approved. A second reading will be conducted at the next council meeting on August 10th. If the measures passed the final reading, the new rates would become effective with the November utility billing. City Manager Rex Thee said, quote, "Even with the increase, it still leaves Monahans with one of the lowest rates in the area," end quote. For residential customers inside the city limits, the first 1,000 gallons of water will increase to $11.55. For 2,000 to 200,000 gallons of usage, the cost will increase to $3.22 per 1,000, and 201,000 to 600,000 gallons is now at $3.65 per 1,000. Inside city limits customers, sewer rates will increase from $17.43 to $18.29. Sewer rates are based on water consumption. The solid waste rate for residential customers outside the city limits will increase from $75 to $78.75 for a once-a-week pickup, and increase to $157.50 for twice-a-week pickup. Commercial customers will see an increase from $32.21 to $33.82. Quote, "The increase for sanitation rates is largely due to the increased cost of metal and gate fees the city pays to take trash to the Odessa landfill," Thee said. Thee told the council, even though all the rates are going up some, based on a minimum monthly bill, residents should only see an increase of less than $6 on their utility bill. The utility rate increases will add an additional $196,000 in revenue for the city during the course of a year. Council members present were Mayor Adam Steen, Rudy Hernandez, Jeppy Wilson, and Richard Hawkins. Member Calvin Carroll and City Attorney Alan Nicholas was not present for the meeting. In regular business, a request from Randy Ply on behalf of Desert Reflections Car Club to close 5th Street between Hale Park and the courthouse for the annual car show on September 11th was approved. The club also requested porta-potties, electricity to be on, and water to be off for the event, which was also approved. An independent audit agreement with Smith & Reeves, PC, for fiscal year-end September 2022 was approved. The cost for the audit is between $39,000 and $57,000, Thee said. In other business, the council approved the Monahans Economic Development Corporation 2021-2022 proposed operating budget. The MEDC board approved the budget in their meeting earlier this month. The budget includes a projected sales tax revenue of $816,000 for the new budget year, combined with a projected beginning balance of $1.3 million, $600,000 in unclassified income, and $2,000 in interest on deposits, leaving a total of around $2.6 million in available funds, an estimated 23.5% decrease from the current budget. The proposed budget expenditures total $180,000, and line items include $12,000 for advertising, scholarships, $10,000 for legal services, and $4,500 for training, and $3,000 for travel. Also included with the expenditures is $140,000 for a professional service agreement, $56,000 for the MEDC director's salary with a 3% pay increase. Capital expense projects is projected at $1.7 million, which is down $60,000 from this year's approved budget, leaving a proposed ending balance of $780,000. In final actionable items, the council took note of the 11 properties submitted by Code Enforcement Officer Richard Covington, found to be in violation of Section 631, Dangerous Buildings of the City Code of Ordinances, and Section 13-2, Cleanliness of Premises. The owner has 10 days from the date of the notice to get the property cleaned up and up to code. quote, "Some of these people have had 2 to 3 weeks to clean up their property, whether it is due to the timing of the city council meeting or because the owner asked for an extension," Covington said. Since the council took note of these properties, a second notice of city ordinance violation will be sent via certified mail, and the owner will have another 10 days to comply. Properties currently shown to be in violation are 800 East B Street, owned by Herbert Smith, 911 South Allen Street, owned by Maria Frere, 411 North Main, owned by Robert Garcia, 408 North Main, owned by Roy Garcia, 702 South Ike, owned by Skylar Colston, 800 South Kenneth Street, owned by Ginger Perry, 401 East A Street, owned by Dora Castaneda, 506 South Calvin, owned by L.A. Chandler, 1601 South Calvin, owned by Josie Kirkendall, 508 South Gary, owned by Richard Hale, and 509 South Franklin, owned by John Rawling. The council will meet again at 3 p.m. on Tuesday, August 10th, in the council chambers at City Hall. Commissioners approve idea to modernize hospital. The story was written by Paul Cyphers. Ward County commissioners, in their regular Monday meeting, agreed with the CEO of Ward Memorial Hospital to not build a new hospital, but to renovate and modernize the existing hospital. Hospital CEO Leticia Rodriguez presented the idea to the commissioners and the first step of expanding the bathroom in patient rooms. Quote, "The bathrooms are not ADA compliant, and some are shared between two rooms. These plans, presented to the commissioners, will alleviate that problem. Other possible things would be a larger laboratory, modernization of the Sandhills Clinic, and adding a second story to house administration services. Instead of new, we can renovate in stages to take advantage of work already done." Quote, "I'm sure there are other things as well, and we will put a team together to come up with ideas. There is also the possibility of applying for grants to help with the cost." End quote. The commissioners approved moving forward to obtain costs for the bathroom renovation as the first step. Quote, "This idea will certainly save a ton of money for the county," Judge Greg Holly said. Quote, "We are already in the first steps of a new jail, and funds have been budgeted, so we will have to evaluate how much money is available. In the meantime, I proposed going ahead with getting the cost and start working on a master plan so we have a roadmap to work from. Having this detail will also help with obtaining grants." End quote. Two actions were taken regarding the Ward County Recreation Department. The first approved action was making changes to the board of directors. The current board is comprised of Eddie Nelms, Dexter Nichols, Jeff Jones, Rex Thee, and Brett Heflin. The new board will be Clay Gardner, Josh Schwab, Jones, Philip Gonzalez, and Heflin. The second approved action was to revise the schedule for use of the event center by the Recreation Department. The first change will move the dates for the youth volleyball leagues from October 15th to November 28th to September 1st to October 26th. The dates for the youth basketball leagues will remain as January 15th, 2022 to February 22nd. These schedules are for the use of the gymnasium only and does not include weekends. In other action, the bid of the Bosworth Company for HVAC and plumbing renovation for the Ward County Golf Pro Shop, the bid for the HVAC was $42,000 and $127,000 for the plumbing work. No other bids were received. The agreement with the City of Monahans for hotel-motel tax distribution for 2021-2022, Monahans City Council approved $50,000 for the Ward County Museum Complex and $418,000 for the Ward County Event Center. With approval from the county, Monahan City Council will take final actions in their September 14th meeting. Commissioners present were Tino Sanchez, Larry Hanna, Dexter Nichols, and Eddie Nelms. The next meeting will be held at 9:30 a.m. on August 9th at the Ward County Courthouse at 400 South Allen Street.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.